It is Or L'Chafei Teves and January 11th. Thank you for coming to a Shovavim Shir. This is the season of the year when there's a teaching to strengthen our knowledge of and commitment to the halachas of Taras and Mishpacha. The Shovavim, Shuvu Bonim Shovavim means that we should do tshuva, but Shovavim stands for Shmos Va'era Bo B'Shalach Yisro Mishpatim. The Shlach HaKadosh talks about it. It's considered an auspicious time to give shurim and study these topics. So thank you very much for being here. As an aside, it was very nice people who told me they couldn't make it because they have another shir, or they have to run out early because of another shir. I think it's a real nice testament to our community that there's a lot of serious and committed Talmud Torah, which is great in its own right. So that's a wonderful thing. So the topic I'd like to talk about tonight, and I do hope to make a separate group. I don't know when it will meet yet. I have to get feedback, but to do some text-based learning of these halachas, maybe we'll start with a little bit of musar from a text, and then a sort of a systematic study of the halachas. But tonight is going to be, as they say in the yeshivas, oyser veinik, out of the sefer, just covering the topic. So tonight's topic is chatzitzos in tevila, which means when a woman immerses in the mikveh, if there are things that hinder the water from encountering all surfaces of the body that they have to. That's called a chatzitza, an impediment. And the halachas are a little bit confusing, and I'd like to try to put out various halachas and concepts, which I hope will clarify things. Almost all of what we're discussing tonight is from Yerodeyasim in Kuf Tzadi Ches, chapter 198 in Hilchos Nida. It's a somewhat lengthy chapter in Shulchan Aruch in Hilchos Nida, but I think the 48 Seifim. But we'll try to make some clarity of it. Ultimately, it's important to ask shilas, and many of the concepts I'll mention are things where there are differing opinions, and a slightly different scenario could make for a different psak. But as my rabbi used to always cite, the Sims clothing store, an educated consumer is our best customer. We're always better off knowing more, if for no other reason, and sometimes a person gets extremely nervous and thinks it's a terrible mistake or error or a vaver that's been done. It's sometimes just good to know the parameters of things, and certainly there are other reasons too. Sometimes it makes things actually halacha lemaisa more clear, so I hope we can cover some of the halachas and the underlying concepts, and I hope you'll find it meaningful. By way of introduction, this is a concept actually that the Shevet Halevi talks about in Vosner, Zichrono Livracha, passed away at the age of over 100 a couple of years ago. I actually learned these halachas from his grandson, who was a close Talmud of his. And a number of his tshuvos, as well as the introduction to his shiurim, he refers to the following concept. When we talk about Hilchos Nida, we talk about Yemei Re'iya, and sometimes we call it Yemei Libun, the time when a woman is actually menstruating, and then the purification time afterwards. She's observing seven clean days afterward. So halachically, it's all the same. She's a nida until she immerses in the mikveh. She's tameya until she immerses in the mikveh. But you do find in halachic literature sometimes differences between the two conceptually. And the Shevet Halevi cites the Ramban in Parshas Achrimos, who uses terminology that seems to indicate that there's actual time of tumah. And then there's the time of being mitayer the machshava, the seven clean days, and ultimately the immersion in the mikveh, sort of take us not only away from tumah, but away from the thought of tumah, and ultimately culminating with the immersion in the mikveh, which brings us to a renewed state of tahara and tahara awareness. And therefore, if our subject matter tonight is chatzitza and avoiding chatzitza, so I think in the underlying emotion of the halacha, it should be a schus for us that whatever impediments there are to machshava tahara, the schus of Talmud Torah about avoiding chatzitza should immerse us in the mehadas, as the Rambam uses the term, and bring tahara in all areas of our lives. So I'd like to talk about a number of concepts and a number of applications and psukim. So let's go over basics. Some people may be familiar with the basics, but then I hope to get into more detail. So to begin, the Gemara in Erevin, and Sukkah, and Nida, and maybe one other place, says as follows, that in order for a... Well, first of all, the Gemara says that to properly immerse, the entire immersion has to be done at once. Unlike, let's say, kasher and kalim, where I can first kasher one side of the utensil, And then the other side, immersion in the mikveh has to be done all at once. If one pinky is sticking out, or one hair, the immersion is not valid. That's not a chatzitza issue. That's a failure to immerse issue. By the way, that is the real reason why we have halacha of an omedes al gaba. In this chapter, in Siv Mem, there's a halacha that you need to have a woman overseeing the immersion in the mikveh. Nowadays, women are used to, they think that that's to go over the checklist, to do whatever they do, they have a number of things that they try to be helpful with. The real reason, I mean, those are all helpful things as well, but the reason, it's halachically mandated to have an omedes al gaba, a woman observing the immersion, to make sure the hair goes under the water. Because she immerses, her whole body goes under, but the hair is still floating at the top, the immersion is not valid. So that's the real reason. To make sure that there's no hair floating on top of the water. In fact, in Siman Kuf Tzadi Hei, which is the halachas of the Harchakos, the Pesachei Tshuva early on quotes a tshuva of the Noda Behuda. Ish v'isha hadarim b'kfar. There's a Jewish man and woman who live out in a hamlet somewhere where there's no woman available to be the overseer of the immersion. So it's really at a period of time where he's not supposed to be seeing her unclad, or certainly not supposed to be helping her with the immersion. But the shaila of the Noda Behuda was asked was, can the husband be the omed al gaba? And in fact, after the lengthy discussion, he says yes, not only to oversee the immersion, but even to actually physically assist her. Tefillah in a mikveh is a lot easier nowadays than it was many years ago. Just picture riding through a freezing cold Lithuania and with the wind blowing, and then schlepping along a barrel of hot water as much as you could carry to dump into a freezing cold well, so it just thaws the water enough that it's not brutally painful. Which, by the way, is another issue in immersion. Immersion in a mikveh cannot be in a circumstance where one is afraid or would naturally recoil, because that itself can make the posture of the mikveh is not valid. But anyway, they know the paskin that the husband could help her with the immersion because it's in the process of tahara. But that's all the concept of omedes al gaba. So the hair has to entirely be submerged under the water. We learn from the es hatofel lebusar, not only her flesh but hair as well. So it all has to be under the water. That's not a chatzitza issue. That would be a non-immersion issue. It all has to be at once. By the way, there's a question in Poskim: how is the omedes al gaba, the woman who observes the immersion, how does she have an emunus? How is she believed? Usually there's a concept of whether it's something us or you only, something is forbidden, you're only trusted to testify if it's within your control. And it's not really within her control, but some say since she's appointing her to be the one to determine that she immersed. The Poskim did talk about that. But chatzitza is where, and that's our subject tonight, is where a person entirely immersed, but there's something blocking, something on the surface of the body, or the hair, or the, they will talk about teeth and things like that soon, but there's something impeding the water from touching all surfaces. So here's the basics. The Gemara in Eirvin says that for it to be a problem min ha-Torah, it has to be ruba u-makbid. It's covering a majority of the body, and it's something you mind. We'll talk about what it means that you mind, but you mind having it on. At times you would want to remove that foreign substance. So to be a d'oraisa problem, it has to be, it's covering a majority of the body, and makbid. Your makbid, something that a person generally doesn't want to always have on him or her. And Sif Hei, the Shulchan Aruch says that actually that the hair counts independently. If it's covering most of the hair, which includes, by the way, if most of the hairs have a knot on them in one spot, if most of the hair is knotted, that would also be called rubo. Hair is counted independently. There is, I believe, a Chachmas Adam that says if it's covering the whole body or all of the hair, then it's d'oraisa, even if she doesn't mind. It's interesting. But what the Gemara says is rubo makbid, it's covering most of the surface of the body and you mind, that would be a d'oraisa problem. What's the Darabbanan? What do the rabbis add? So if you have either or, if you have mia tamakbid, it's covering only a minority of the body surface but you mind, or rubo v'eino makbid, it's covering majority of the body and you don't mind. The Gemara says, so why don't we go take it one step further and even make a gzeira that the tefillah is invalid if it's miyut she'eino makbid? Take it one step further And the Gemara says explicitly, no, that would be a gzeira l'gzeira. This is supposed to be a safeguard. We don't make a safeguard on a safeguard. If you have one negative factor, we're afraid you'll end up doing it with two negative factors, which would be a Torah violation. But we don't say, and even if you have none, because you might come to do one, then you might come to do two, so that's taking it too far. The Gemara says that's a gzeira l'gzeira, and therefore that's not a problem. However, in the first se'if in this chapter in Shulchan Aruch, the Rama quotes the Hagos Sharidura, which is the Truma Sedeshin, who says that even things that are not a chatzitza, she should remove. It's almost exactly against the Gemara. The Gemara says, why don't we make such a gzeira? And the Gemara says, we don't, because we don't take it that far. And here we have in Shulchan Aruch, no, gzeira atu. So all the poskim ask this, and they say, because this is only the chachila. Nobody would say that if you didn't do this, that the tevila is invalid. In fact, there are instances in Shulchan Aruch where there's no choice. For example, in cases where they actually can't watch the hair, they would make like a loose fitting kind of a bonnet that would hold the hair down. That's explicit in Shulchan Aruch as well. So there are cases where people bedafka specifically were putting something on. By the way, in places where there's no mikveh and they immerse in the ocean, they usually do it on the eighth day and they do it with clothes on because there could be people around. So they put on loose fitting clothes. That's against this Ramah here, that l'chachila take off anything, even if it's too loose to be a chatzitza, but there are cases where it's just not practical to follow that. But l'chachila, in a normal circumstance, in a regular mikveh immersion, a woman should remove anything, even if it's not a chatzitza, just everything should be removed, whether it could be a problem or not. Now, what's called makpid? Okay, most of the shailas that come up in laws of immersion are with some small, it's not usually where the majority of the body surface is covered. That's a more rare kind of a thing, but usually it's where there's some small something or other that was noticed at the mikveh, after the mikveh. It could depend when we discover it, but when often we want to know, is that something that's makpid or not makpid? So that is a significant discussion. Generally, if you look in Shulchan Aruch, there's a rule, batla daita itzel kol adam. That even if she says, I don't care, but if most people care, if most people would find it to be something that's makbid, generally the halacha would be l'chumra. What the poskim say, quoting a ravid, if I'm not mistaken, is if it's something, even if it's something normally a person is willing to leave on, but in certain circumstances that can come up at any time, the person would want to remove that foreign object or foreign substance, then that is called makbid. The classic example is she wears her wedding ring all the time, but if she were going to knead dough, she would take it off.
What about nail polish, for example? That people would knead dough with nail polish on?
Yeah, so I'm going to talk about
nail... Half of it's there, half of it's not there. They're pretty makbid to take it off.
So I'll talk about nail polish at length. Nail polish, historically, in these halachas, has a long history. L'chachila, certainly should be removed. By the way, as a rabbi, you learn lots of new things. Gel manicures are very hard to remove, but in a pinch, you can Google this too, by the way, but whatever they use to remove it, you put it like tin foil and cotton swab, and you leave it there for like 20 minutes, then you can get it off. Usually, most women, I think, have them taken off professionally, but there are ways of doing it non-professionally if needed, and that sometimes does come up. Nail polish is a big discussion. In fact, Alan, since you brought it up, I'm going to jump over to that. Yeah?
You said the majority of the body or makbid or and makbid, right?
To be d'oraisa, it's majority and makbid, but midrabanan, which is where all the shahs come up, is either or. It's covering the majority of the body, or it's a small amount, but it's something you mind. It could be a ring. We'll talk about it. It could be something under a nail. It could be something caught between the teeth. We'll talk about basis time. Areas that are internal have to be ro'i l'bias mayim. Have to be water. Could get there, but water does not have to get. She's not supposed to open her mouth. Underwater, we'll talk about that soon also. But since Alan brought it up, let's comment on that for a second. And this, maybe you can help create clarity out in the world. Certainly, l'chachila, people who are trained and comfortable in halachas remove nail polish before an immersion. Historically, this was a big hurdle. The Rav Chaim Ozer has a tshuva in the Achiezer. There were people who would keep taras on mishpacha, but not if they had to remove their nail polish. So he himself writes a tshuva about it and ultimately told the, he said he didn't want to issue a ruling, but told the overseers, the attendants at the mikveh, to look the other way. If nail polish was entirely intact, and again, this is not lechachilu, you should just be aware of it. Actually, Rabbi Shmuel and I were talking about this with mikveh policy, because in Israel it comes up a lot. So let me explain the issues that would be involved. This is instructive because it covers a number of topics. One is tseva, color. The Rambam actually has a tshuva where he says something that's just color but has no substance to it is not a problem, but if it has substance to it, it's a chatzitza. Which the Rambam holds explicitly that, I mean, nail polish has some substance to it as opposed to like...
Especially gel.
Huh?
Especially
gel. Yeah, but either one. I mean, something like paint. Huh?
Henna.
Yeah, there are tshuvas about henna. But there are things, there's a more of a piskei tshuva. A woman was in the mikveh, and it was they had the furnace running there in times of old, and like there was some color, there was some from the smoke, there was some discoloration she discovered on her skin when she got home. That's not a problem because it's just color. It has no, scientifically it has substance to it, but it looks like it has no consistent, no tangible consistency.
But hair color.
Huh?
Hair color.
So if it's permanent, that's... but the thing is like this, that's a big machlokas. If you look carefully at the sources, many Rishonim seem to be saying, no, anything that's lanoi, even if it has consistencies to it, it's not a problem. It's a huge machlokas of poskim, how to interpret. So, again, certainly lachachilat's removed, but the way some understand is that if it's decorative... If it has no consistency to it, then even if it doesn't, and by the way, this is halacha lemaaseh, sometimes a woman had, I got iodine or something, or a marker, and she's tried and tried and tried, it's not coming off, there's no, you don't feel it, there's nothing there, ultimately she's washed it, she can immerse with that, because it's just tzeva, it has no consistency to it. The shaila is when it does, so then if it's decorative, which the Shevet HaLevi says, that it would have to be intact, if it's already chipping, as somebody mentioned, then that's not decorative anymore, then a person is mocked, but if the nail polish is half falling off, then people don't like to leave it that way. But if it's still good, if it's all intact, so then, in terms of the color, there's what to rely on. The second issue, though, is the machaber, the Shulchan Aruch himself mentions a minhag to cut the nails. Nohagu, he says, l'fisha en yachol z'lchaben ma nikr. If you find some dirt, it depends if it's here or if it's here. So therefore, no'agu anoshim litol tziparneim b'shas tefillah. The minhag is to cut the nails. So the Sephardic source of halacha says the minhag is to cut the nails. Ashkenazi halacha takes it a good deal further. Because two se'ifim later, the Rama says, u'me'achar, based on a Ravon, u'me'achar dekvar no'agu litol tziparneim afilum tziparn achas nishur b'yoda v'tavla tzricha tefillah acheres. Since the minhag is to cut the nails, if she discovers even one nail that she didn't cut, she has to immerse again. She has to immerse again. So says the Rama. There's a machlokas how to interpret this. One way is, since nails are so susceptible to get a little bit of dirt caught under them, that's why they have the minhag to cut them lechachila. So svarak halacha would be to cut it lechachila. The Rama is saying, we take that so far, the concern that there'll be something caught under there, we take it so far that we make it even b'dieved, you have to redo, we have to redo the immersion. That's one way to understand it. The other way to understand it is a concept called kol ha'umed likotzeitz kikotzeitz dami. Something that was destined to be cut, that you meant to, that was meant to be cut, it's as if it's cut already, and this is a fascinating thing, but then it's as if the extra length on the nails, my nails were only supposed to be up to here. And now there's an extra piece up to here, that's like something stuck onto my nails. Which, that's a machlokas of poskim. Is that really true? Could there be such a concept? But some understand it that way. This ends up being a machlokas between the Shach and the Taz, and how far to take this stringency of the Rama. Again, this is a minhag, but, you know, so is not eating rice on Pesach. You know, it's not chametz. If somebody's not going to observe the halacha fully, it's much better to eat that. But we do take Ashkenazi minute for Ashkenazi, and we take it quite seriously. So the Shach takes it so far that even if the night passed, she discovers the next morning, oh, and there's a nail that's too... By the way, when I say too long, it's like the Shevet Alevi in Yeshiva says, it means it's not keneged habas. It means it's long, not just not trimmed down, but beyond keneged habasar, which it's long. Okay, you have to figure out what that means. So the Shach says you have to go back. The Maram Lublin is a tshuva that the Taz quotes, the Shach actually quotes it too, but doesn't go with it, that we're much more, quote-unquote, lenient once the night has passed. Because whether she had relations or not, it doesn't look nice to be machmer after that, to themselves, to others. There are things in halacha where if the night has passed, then we follow the more lenient opinion. So that's the way the Taz paskins, and that's how many poskim rule, that if a person would discover the next morning that there was an untrimmed nail, we'd be lenient. Interestingly, on Shabbos, what happens if it's a Friday night immersion, and a woman notices she didn't cut a nail? So I don't know how one would do this, but the Mishnah Berurah says in Siman Shin Mem, quoting the Magen Avraham, that the best would be to get a non-Jew to cut the nails in an atypical way. Bite to bite, yeah. Hey, fella. Not sure exactly. First of all, I think you'd end up with more of a mess. I just don't know how you. But if you're close with somebody who will bite, if your wife knows somebody who will bite her nails, yeah, it'd be very good. Right, they were a friend before. But in theory, and if it's practical, that would be the preferred. Ideal would be to, with the Mishnah Berurah passes like the Magen Avraham, to cut them in an atypical way, like biting or ripping. Second best is with a clipper, with a keli, but that's all only if it's possible. If not, then even the Magen Avraham says that then she can immerse without it, and we'll rely on the Taz, we'll rely that the minhag is on the chachil, provided she can check and there isn't dirt caught there, then ultimately we'll assume this minhag was only when possible, but here it's not possible. So Rav Avad Yosef, for instance, has a tshuva back from when he was in Cairo back in the 1950s, had the same issue. There were people who would keep the halachas, but the nails were not negotiable. The manicure was not a negotiable thing. And it continues to this day. It's a whole thing in Israel. The rabbinic got involved. But so there's really two issues with it. One is the color, and one is the non-trimming of the nails. So writing for Sephardic halacha, Rav Avad Yosef comes pretty similar to what the... What Reb Chaim Moser wrote, that it's very suboptimal, but he says certainly for us Svardim, it's only a lechachila, and really the halach is that something that is decorative is not a chatzitza. That's really the halach. And he makes a strong case against the poskim who assume that when it has consistency, it would be a chatzitza. He says most Rishonim hold not that way, so there is what to rely on. And he says the Ashkenazim have a little bit of a stronger issue because there the Ramah that makes it even b'di'evit. I have his tshuva here though, but just to illustrate his feeling on it, in the middle of the tshuva he writes, Ulam bevada shekol heter ze noel lanashim shelo yovu lishmoa. L'tzayis l'divrei chacham, it's only if people don't want to listen. V'yesh lochush l'takol achas v'shalom pen yimnu me mitzvahs tzvila b'chlal v'yavo l'day yisr karas, they won't go to the mikvah if you enforce halacha. We're forcing ourselves to find a heter. Amnam baru ki kol benos Yisrael aksheres yelchu beikvos imoseinu akadosha shasus yagla tar bedvarim halalu. It's funny. He writes in the middle. He says v'lochein alenu lazhinu lazarzon. He says they shouldn't lishmar archos Paris. There's a pasuk in Tehillim. I guard myself, lishmar archos paritz, not to go against the ways of the those who are partzim, who are paritz. So he has pariz. Don't follow the fashions from Paris. But yeah, that's what he writes here. Very, very interesting. He writes that aside from the halachic reason where this became a minhag and we should keep it. But a fascinating thing, the Zohar Kodesh, in at least two places. This is from the Raya Mehemna, says as follows: Beshaita de itza istakos l'skarova babala. When a woman is being matah herself, it's tarichus lemeiv chulakol sitra acha. There's something like she has to give away. Uman ihu hahu chulka tufroha her nails betinufin didhon the nails. So the Zohar Kodesh actually refers specifically to the trimming of the nails as part of the tahara process of isha labal, of a woman to her husband. The Zohar and Achrimos also says it. Kad boyas itzalis daka, boya lasafra, it mentions the hair, and it says it lasafra tufra, and to cut her nails. So he says it also has Kabbalistic Some of the Kabbalists are going to talk about how the Marishan was initially all covered in nail, and then it retreated to here, and this is a throwback to that, so it's like a concept of trimming the nails, which is connected.
Is it called a chatzitza, or is it like, what this far that's a chatzitza, the nail itself?
So if you say it's omed likatze, it was destined to be cut. So the Beis Yosef discusses this, that something that was destined to be cut up, it's already considered like a foreign object.
No, but nails in general, I'm saying, forget one that wasn't cut.
What do you mean?
What's as far that any of the nails could cut in the first place?
Originally they did it because they were concerned for things getting cut
underneath. Dirt underneath.
Yeah, dirt underneath. That's what right. And once they were concerned for this, that became the practice. And once that's the practice, so it could be considered a chatzitza. That's a machlokus, whether that svara is really valid. Reb Chaim Ozer, again, was not afraid of anything in Pesach, and he's very hesitant in his ruling there, and ultimately says, just let it go, but let's not say anything official for those who won't immerse otherwise. He does adduce the svara. He says, maybe today that's not really the majority attitude. Maybe, you know, he does put that forth, because omer likotze means that's what everybody does, but he says, maybe today that's not...
So to that logic, if somebody was going to get a haircut... That's not chatzitza.
So, if there's something that a person always does before immersion, there are poskim more strict about it. Like, some poskim advise, don't like always shave the legs. You know, like, if someone's doing it a day early, if it's not 100% consistent, it's a little better. I don't think that there's some poskim that's a very strict about that. I don't think it's really a chatzitza anyway, but some hold like if there's something. That you always do, it could be. Interestingly, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in a tshuva uses a mechanism that's a little hard to understand. He had a tshuva where a woman was in the mikveh Friday night and discovered a little piece of nail sticking out and said to the attendant, "You have to cut my nails." And she said, "I can't, it's Shabbos. We can't cut it." So she immersed, and then she had a question whether it was a problem. So he told her she should not cut it for a week. So he said, but what does that help? Retroactive. He said, well, first of all, because the woman told her you can't cut it, Shabbos. In her mind, it was meant to stay. This is not to be cut. This cannot be cut. Now, Shabbos, adding to that we're going to leave it. And I saw Menashe Klein in the tshuva. Also, you might find poskim who use that as a partial technique for where there's a need for leniency. And all these things, you always ask a shaila, because these are involved halachos. But some poskim will... add, don't trim it afterward, and that makes it a little bit better. But anyway, that's the story with nails. The issue of color and the issue of trimming. So manicure. There are a lot of truths about manicures. Oh, so I'm glad you mentioned that. The Pesachei Tshuva, which is in the bottom of the page in Shulchan Aruch, often quotes. The question was toenails. The Pesachei Tshuva often quotes a sefer called Chamude Daniel, which was a manuscript, it wasn't even printed, who says that toenails are not the same as fingernails. Certainly with regard to simply not cutting them, and he wants to say, and probably even if you find something underneath. The second point is more debated in the poskim. The Aruch HaShulchan says he's not sure about that. In other words, to say that people are so not mocked about their toes, that even if you find dirt under the nail, the Aruch HaShulchan says, Tzarachim, he's not sure. But the idea that it's the minhag is so strict that even to it's right here. Shadaitu lahakol b'tziponei reglaim she'ena tzricha tvila acheres hagam she'ena yodas and haya naki. Even though she doesn't know if at the time of the immersion they were clean or not. Did you have it okay? Because of she'efshar afili yodas she'lo haya naki. He wanted to suggest maybe if she knew it wasn't, the people's feet are not as strict about that. The latter point. Is more questionable. Again, many of these halachas, it will depend when the shaila is. If a woman's in the mikveh and she can just go back in, people will be much more lenient. Even if she went home, it will be much more strict rather than tell her to go back. Even if she's on the way home, if the night has already passed, then the halacha tends to favor not going back unless it's a real problem. Yeah?
How far do you take this? If somebody's scheduled for surgery, they're going to have something removed.
So, I would say if it's in a circumstance now where it needs to be removed, I mean, the halacha talks about Eivur Medulderes, the mere fact that a woman can plan to get a haircut the next day, and that's not a problem. Where that comes up more is like dental work, a temporary fill-in. Let me segue to that right now. If it's still part of the body, even though you've said, I mean, I'm going to have this, but if there's no reason right now, it's not a chatzitza. Nails are kind of unique in that way. Let me share with you the following tshuva of Moshe Feinstein. Many poskim have tshuvos about glass eyes, and more common are temporary fillings, permanent fillings, other dental work. Ramosha is a tshuva about a woman had a glass eye, and actually it was from Frank Greenblatt from Memphis, who asked in the Shaila, I have to say, if you're open to it right here. And he quoted a tshuva of the Sholem Meshiv, that's Rav Yosef Sholem Nuttinson, who said, even though it pains her, apparently it was uncomfortable, it was a tshuva in the 50s, even though it was uncomfortable for her, but Linoy, because she wanted to appear that way, so it's not called makbid. It's something that... she wants to be there, it's decorative, and therefore it's not a problem. Moshe says, if it's something that's painful, but when I'm in public, I bear it, but when I go home, I would want to take it out, he says that he doesn't buy that svar, he doesn't like it. But he has other reasons why he held to be makel. By the way, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in the tshuva talking about that was responding to a Rav who wanted to say that it's a what we call balua. And I'm jumping a little bit all over the place, but let me just throw another concept out on the table, and that is the surface of the body has to be exposed to the water. Then there's another category called a beis hastarim. Beis hastarim means a part of the body like the mouth where it has to be ro'i l'bias maim, has to be that if you were to open your mouth, water could touch the surfaces, but you don't actually have water come there. That's why the teeth have to be cleaned and so on. A woman is not supposed to open her mouth, says in Shulchan Aruch, she's just supposed to keep her mouth not pressed shut, but simply just closed. That's called a beis hastarim. There's a question in halacha, where does a beis hastarim end? Okay, the truth is a woman found something in her nose after immersing. At a certain point, it becomes called balua, like swallowed. It's internal. Beis hastarim is kind of in between external and internal. So where does the beis hastarim end? And this has a lot of relevance. Shevet Alevi has a tshuva about a woman who forgot to take out a bedikah cloth and immersed. Various medical apparatus, birth control apparatus, other things that inserted vaginally, or a woman forgot to take it out or couldn't take it out, is that a chatzitza. So it's very interesting. The Ramami Fano, who's one of the great Kabbalists and poskim, and Rabbi Kiva Eger quotes him, as does the Chachmas Adam and Binas Adam, says a rule that would make for a lot of leniency. He says something that sometimes is exposed, could sometimes be outwardly visible in a person's body, is called a beis hastarim. If it's never exposed, it's not. So if you're talking higher up in the nose or in any part of the body that isn't exposed ever, that's called internal and does not have to be chatzitza free, which would make for a lot of the shilas that I just mentioned would be no issue. In fact, that's what her mom found was talking about. She didn't clean out her nose fully. She says if it's more further up the nasal cavity, then it's no problem. And you can apply that to other things as well. Other poskim are more hesitant. The Noda Behuda doesn't quote that, if I'm not mistaken, but the Noda Behuda talks about this. A halacha that the Ramah mentions later that before going to the mikvah, a woman's supposed to urinate and check that she doesn't need to go to the bathroom. So the poskim talk about it. Obviously, I mean, the bladder is not a chatzitza. That's certainly internal, but what's the issue? The problem is that if a person has to go to the bathroom, they tense up. So anatomically, somehow, something will be tensed up that would be the equivalent of not exposing some parts of the body that are supposed to be. So the Pesachei Tshuva says that proves that even things that are a little bit more internal are still called beis hastarim. So there's a little bit of a lack of clarity what exactly is called the beis hastarim, and that makes a very big difference. In many cases, bidyeved, I mean, you should ask a shayla, but bidyeved, if it's not pretty close to the surface, it's not going to be considered a beis hastarim, and it'd be okay if something was there. I'll mention something else. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a fascinating Chiddush, which has a lot of relevance. And he says like this. When we talk about a chatzitza, there's two ways you can have a chatzitza. One is something that's stuck to me. There's glue. Something's, you know, there's a sticker, a band-aid stuck to my hand. There's another way, which is, if I close my hand, there's nothing on it. Or if I, you know, I hold my hand with my other hand. What he calls there is, he says, there's no chatzitza, there's just something in the way. That's the way he refers to it. And he says, on the body, either one is a problem. Either one. You go into the mikveh like this, I have a problem. Remind me to clarify that in a second. But, because you touch the water first, but in a Beis HaStarim, Rav Moshe says, only things that are stuck. Only if it's mahuduk. Only if it's stuck. Rav Moshe holds in a Beis HaStarim, in the mouth. And by the way, this is why he's lenient with b'dieved, with contact lenses. He says, contact lenses aren't stuck to your eye, they're there. But he says, that would be ro'i l'bias mayim. So the same thing with any kind of apparatus, if it's not really stuck, it's just there. L'chachila, it should all, you know, be removed. But Rav Moshe holds that really it's not a problem in a Beis HaStarim. He has lengthy tshuvas where he proves this. Rav Moshe says that's why the halacha says that a woman immerses, she closes her mouth. He says, you know why? Because the two lips touch together. That's not a chatzitza. That's like holding your hand. You couldn't glue your lips shut, that would be a chatzitza, but one lip against the other. He says that's the logic of it. It's that it's a Beis HaStarim, and a Beis HaStarim, if it's not stuck to it, it's just there, it's just pressing on it, that would be okay. And that's why there are a lot of tshuvas about people who have a punctured eardrum or something like that. What should you do? So Rav Moshe, some poskim didn't like putting cotton or something, and Rav Moshe holds that's okay, that's just something in the way in a Beis HaStarim, and it is permissible. And when it comes to a temporary filling, Rav Moshe says like this, and for those who like a little bit of lundus, this is good, we get some lundus now. Rav Moshe talks about a temporary filling or any similar medical or dental apparatus. So, first of all, I just want to put out there, the fact that a Beis HaStarim, a cavity like the mouth, needs to be ro'i l'bias mayim, most assume is derabbanan. There's a Ritva that says that explicitly. You know. So generally the poskim will already take a lenient approach to it because they'll say the whole min ha-Torah, you don't need, according to Torah law, eat a whole bag of Oreo cookies and then just go in the mikveh. It doesn't matter. Min ha-Torah, you wouldn't have to clean out a part of the body that's not openly exposed to the water. Mostly it starts off as a derabbanan. Plus, miyit hamakbit is also a derabbanan. So you're dealing with a derabbanan on it. You know, you have a little bit. By the way, I don't want everybody to walk away with, oh wow, everything was lenient, no problem. Don't bother cleaning your teeth. Chas v'shalom, we take halacha very seriously. All this notwithstanding, I just want to explain to you what the mechanism is to find the leniency after the fact. As fakas, they'll be more lenient if it's within a Beis HaStarim. But Rav Moshe says as follows. He's talking about a temporary filling. He says, if you have some medical or dental apparatus that's harming the body, that's a problem. You can't say that, you know, that's in a makbid. It is makbid. I can't wait to get it out. It's uncomfortable. But if you have something that's not harming the body, but it itself will fall apart. Temporary filling just won't last forever. So Rav Moshe says, so now we have to make a chakira. You have to look at it. You can look at it in two ways. Why is it that eino makbid is not a problem? Is it that you say that thing is batel to the body? It's like it's part of my body. Or do you say this area? Let's say I have a tooth with a temporary filling. So what am I going to do when the temporary filling is no good? I'm going to put another filling there. So the other way to look at it is just to say that surface is not considered a surface that's meant to be exposed. That surface of my body is meant to be covered for the rest of time. Unfortunately, I had too many candies in my youth, and now that part of my tooth is always meant to be covered, be it with this filling, be it with that filling. So Rav Moshe says like this, if the way you want to look at it is this piece of silver or white, whatever it is batel to my body, well, if it's only a temporary, it's not batel, because it's not going to be here in a month. So you can't say it became part of the body. It's not a permanent part of the body. It's not going to stay there. But if the lumdus is just that part of my body doesn't need to be exposed. That part of my body has been determined now. It's not meant to be exposed anymore. I'll always have something covering it. So then, even a temporary filling, as long as it's comfortable, and it's not something you want to remove now would be okay. So Rav Moshe has Tshuvas where he proves the latter approach, and that's his lamdas, that's his explanation why a stima zmanis, a temporary filling, would not be a chatzitza. Generally, many poskim want that it should be in for 30 days, some hold 30 days from the immersion. It's better to schedule things that way. Frankly, there are many who hold 7 days from the immersion, and if even that's not possible, there's other things. Ask a Shaila, but there may be other things to rely on. But many poskim want that it's there for a while, at least with regard to something that a priori you know you're going to remove, like a filling. But anyway, that's Rav Moshe's lumdus on that matter.
Not only is it inside, it's only in, like in the mouth.
So it gets a little stricter when it's not. But, I mean, they do talk about stitches, even that sometimes they talk about dental stitches in the mouth, but sometimes they talk about stitches in other places in the body. Melting stitches, poskim generally considered not as a problem. Anytime there's medical apparatus, which really is a chatzitza, but it's painful to remove. It cannot be removed. A person has an injury, you just, this cannot, this cast or this dressing, it cannot be removed. Ask a shayla. That's a serious shayla, but the poskim are makel depending on the circumstance. You need a qualified posek. How long, how impractical is it to remove it? How much can it be cleaned around it? But there are many tshuvas that talk about if a person has to say it would be painful to remove, I want this to stay on. I absolutely do not want this to be removed because it would be painful. So many posts can have approaches to be lenient, just to clean around it and then to immerse. But that's a serious shaila and requires, in each case is different, requires a serious psak. By the way, posts can do talk about whether the gzeira of miyud hamakbid is even b'makom igun. Shevet Alevi has a number of tshuvas. What if this woman has something that is what you would call makpid, but she just has no choice, there's no way to remove it, can't be removed. So some poskim say that's a serious shaila for a real posek, but that some say Chazal never meant that halacha to be in a place where then this woman can never go to the mikveh. So that's also something to bear in mind.
Going back to the glass eye, what was that was balua? That's the chat that the eye is.
So Rav Moshe basically says, no, Rav Tzipras Frank says you can't call it balua, means where you don't see the chatzitza item. He says nobody can call a glass eye balua, but what he does say is that if you mean something to stay there, and it's. Rav Moshe says two things. If it doesn't pain her, and you mean for it to stay there, then it's just, it's not a chatzitza, it's not makbid.
What does it mean to stay there forever? Like to take it out and put it back in?
Yeah, but if there's, like a temporary filling, if she takes it out, she'll get another one, but she means for that area always to be covered, so he says that would not be a chatzitza. It would not be a chatzitza.
Braces, the other way around?
So braces, if they're there for a long time, you know, you have to ask a shayla. It's a lot better to schedule things, you know, in a person's life, they don't need it. But if a woman's going to be wearing braces for a long time, you talk to a posek, but you have to clean them very well. But the poskim are lenient. I saw a Rafelder, Zachron Levracha, quotes Rav Moshe, that if a woman takes off her braces for her wedding, because she doesn't want to be in the picture, then it's very. Then Rav Moshe didn't feel comfortable being makel. Then he put him on the next day, and then. But shaila should be asked if that comes up. But basically, things that are there for a long time and are not removable except professionally. Shaila should be asked, but there are approaches for leniency.
On a similar note, do the concept of chasidus apply similarly to Tilsi Dayim and also like Tevila for Tumah purposes?
Yeah, In fact, the other place where you'll find these halachas are in Tilsi Dayim. A person has a ring and they can't get it off. So basically, if you can rotate it, it's better to take it off. But if it's loose enough that you could move it around, you'll find that in Halachos and Tilsi Dayim, it's applicable here. We're more lenient with regard to Tilsi Dayim because it's not krisus, it's not as chamor, but a lot of the tshuvas talk about the same, like nail polish, we're not strict about Tilsi Dayim. This halacha that l'chatchila take everything off, that's for nita, not for Tilsi Dayim. which you just reminded me, there are a lot of tshuvas about a woman who has either a head injury or something in the ear, and it's dangerous to have the water come in. So one of the suggestions that's put forth in the poskim, if you look in Hilchos Tevilas Kelim, in Siman Kuf Chof in Yeridea, second Se'if, so let's say you're immersing a big glass bowl, okay? You're not using the... So a big glass bowl, and it's heavy, and you're afraid, you know, really, the water's supposed to touch all surfaces, so I'm holding it in my hand, I put it in. If I let go, it might end up with broken glass all over the bottom of the mikveh. So if you put it in, and you put your other hand in, and let's say you don't want to let go even for a moment. A lot of people just, you know, throw it up for a second, but if I put my other hand into the mikveh water, and then grab it, and then let go of the first one, so my second hand first touched the mikveh water, was never out of the mikveh water, and then touched the keli. See, what you have in halacha is like this. The Shulchan Aruch says, if you put water on your hand first, like, now Shulchan Aruch would tell you, you could even put your hand on the tap water and then grab the bowl and put it in. Then even though you're holding it, it's like there's water touching all surfaces. The Ramah says, no, it's got to be mikveh water. And some posts can say, and even the Ramah, he means mikveh water that didn't come out of the mikveh. So the best way to do it is to do the handoff underwater, because then your second hand's already in the mikveh water, it was never out of it, and then touched it. So Poskim talk about, the Mishmas of Rome talks about this as an eitzim. There are many cases where there are medical scenarios. So a woman who needed to immerse but absolutely could not have water get into the ear, one suggestion was that the attendant gets her hand wet from mikveh water, basically shakes it up and puts her finger in her ear and helps her down. Again, practically, I don't know how well that works. Ramosh has other reasons why hell you could put cotton in, as I mentioned, but that's based on that concept that the water was there. There, I don't think it's practical to do it underwater. There, you'd have to follow the basic reading of the Ramosh, just touch the mikveh water and then put it in. But that's also a possibility. People ask me about permanent makeup. Permanent makeup is a tattoo shayla. Not a chatzitza shayla. There are tshuvas that talk about what do they call it? Micropigmentation is the term for it, but it's basically makeup that lasts for years. Rashi and Kedoshim says that Ksovas Kaka, the prohibition of tattoo, is lasts forever. So the post can talk about, does it mean literally forever? What if it's not? And also, does it have to be writing? It's Ksovas Kaka, it's right. What if it's only color? But numerous poskim have tshuvas, and they're very hesitant about it. So that would be a shayla, that would be a separate shayla. But in terms of a chatzitza shayla, it's not anything that any color that's there, and it's lasting for years. It's not removable. It's not going to be a shayla in the laws of chatzitza. I mentioned before when we're talking about nails. I just want to add another point. That is, if a nail rips, there's a sif in Shulchan Aruch. You have a nail and it's torn across, or it's half cut. So what it says in Shulchan Aruch is pirsha ruba. If it's most of the way cut across, it's not a chatzitza. If it's less than 50%, it is. So why is this? So here too we have a machlokas. And it's fascinating because there's two totally different ways of understanding what the issue is here. According to the Taz, if it's only a small slit, that's tighter. So the part of the nail that's already been cut, that's touching the lower part of the nail, still attached to the body, it's a tight space, water doesn't get in, and it's a chatzitza. If it's a big cut, that's already looser, water can get in, and it's not a problem. The Beis Yosef holds not that way. The Beis Yosef holds that it's not the area where the cut is that's the chatzitza. It's this concept of omed likatzeitz. He says once it's half cut, once it's partially cut, so you're going to want to cut it off. So it's a chatzitza. But if it's cut most of the way and you still leave it there, that proves you don't care, and it's not destined to be cut off. That sounds a little forced, that's far, but if it's most of the way cut across and you still leave it there, then you know it doesn't bother you. It would be so easy to tear it off and you didn't, so it's not a chatzitza. That's how the Beis Yosef understands it. Significant to know This here is a Sefer Lechem B'Simla, written by Shlomo Gansri, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Just a funny story as an aside. When I was learning these halachas years ago, I purchased this edition of the Lechem B'Simla, and I was studying the halachas of the size of a kesem, and you know, every posek used in the local currency of their time, and he uses an 1849, whatever this is, and I was like, wow, it's very small, it's a very strict shita, so it's much smaller than the way we paskin. Then a few days later, I was davening Maariv in Teitelbaum's in Queens, and I look up, and I see a Lechem B'Simla. Sure enough, this is just a shrunken version. So it's amazing. But anyway, Shlomo Gansri was one of the big poskim, and he says as follows, without getting too complicated, in the Mishnah it just says a nail that has gotten partially cut is not a chatzitza. There's a Tosefta that says if it's majority cut, it's not a chatzitza. Some Rishonim say, so we paskin like the Tosefta, and the Tosefta means that only if it's majority, it's not, but if it's minority, it is, and that's how we paskin. But many Rishonim say, no, if it's majority cut, it's not a chatzitza. It's a kal v'chomer minority, and there's no issue here, and the Rambam holds that way, and many Rishonim hold that way. Basically, the Lechem in Simla, he has two things, Lechem and Simla. So in Simla, I haven't marked it, in Sifchav Beis, in these halachas, he says, since the majority of the Rishonim hold not like the Shulchan Aruch, kufi hanira b'diavad v'avar halayli yesh l'smoch l'hakel. And many later posts can quote this. If night's already passed, and she had a ripped nail, since the majority of Rishonim hold not that way, it's basically paskening against the Shulchan Aruch. I don't know, for a Svardi who goes directly with the Psakim of Moran, that might not be an appropriate psak, but for Ashkenazim, many of the later posts can do cite that. And it's something to bear in mind. I'll mention, even though it says in Halacha that on Erev Shabbos, that a woman's not supposed to knead when she's going to be going to the mikvah, she's not supposed to get involved with dough because it can stick and we're worried about things getting under the nails. The poskim say, the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says it, not here, but in Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, and Sidrei Tar, one of the other poskim says, but if she always makes challah on Erev Shabbos, she can make it now also, and she should just make sure to clean her hands carefully, but one does not have to desist from making challah, even if she's going to the mikveh that night, or whatever night it is that she's making the challah for Shabbos, that would be permissible. Nowadays with gloves, it's a lot easier. I don't think they had gloves, when these kind of gloves, when the Simla was writing. People ask about using conditioner. Generally, I think women don't. Women who don't need it don't use conditioner when they're going to the mikveh because it leaves a film on the hair. However, some women's hair knots up. They don't use conditioner. They can't get it straight. And I saw Rav Felder quotes of Moshe saying that it's lanoi. It's just something that's done to make the hair look nice and therefore is not a problem, which is interesting because that it is theoretically on all of the hair. So once you talk about all of the hair, that could be more chamur, but I think most women are taught not to use it, but there are those who need it, like they can't, so she can use it, just to wash it out well, but it is not a problem. Sometimes with a Friday night immersion, I'm not really here to do, these are already halachas and kuftzadi tests, but sometimes with a Friday night immersion, it's very hard to not eat the meal in between the preparations and the immersion, and some swarm in halacha, you'll see it says not to, but really there's grounds to be lenient. She just cleaned the teeth out very carefully. She did her preparations. She can, if necessary, eat in between. You can ask a shayla, but she can eat in between and then clean the teeth and immerse later. I'm just trying to look at my... So it's interesting. One of the poskim says avoid the meat, but really the halacha is that of the Suda's mitzvah, including Shabbos, she can eat meat, so it's okay. It really is okay.
How could she even clean her teeth well, though? Because, I mean, most people's teeth nowadays is, like, likely to bleed if you're cleaning it pretty well. And on Shabbos, that's your problem. Especially with the meat.
Yeah, people who tend to bleed from flossing have to be careful. Yeah, shouldn't do some sick ratio. But, yeah, if it's going to be a problem, then chachamena verosho. But you should just, you know, with a toothpick or whatever in some way... to be able to clean up the teeth after it.
Contact lenses?
Huh? So they should be removed. Certainly, l'chachila, certainly they should be removed. Some post-mold even a problem post-fact. I've just, Rav Moshe held that in the eye, unless it's something that's stuck, which hopefully you wouldn't have, just something that's there after the fact is not a not a problem. Certainly, l'chachila, they should be removed, but Rav Moshe, and there are others too, who hold that b'diyah, some hold depends on the type of lenses. Some hold if it's lenses you leave in for a week, that's different. The ones you take out nightly, some like it less. But Rav Moshe held regardless that it's not a problem. But certainly l'chachila, they should be removed. Okay, I think this covers some of the halachas. There certainly are more. And again, please always ask a shayla if a question comes up. But I hope this clarifies some of the basics. Yeah.
In the beginning, you said that even the husband can be homer al gaba and in the ocean, or he can even dunk her head.
Now, the other who was talking about, there was no woman available.
But how can he even touch her?
Because lo shavik inish. You need to be the note of Yehuda to paskin this, but since it's for the process of being matar, and the harchakos are meant, it's not an affectionate type of touching, it's just touching, and then the harchakos are meant to prevent them from doing an issa. So why would he do an issa? The whole purpose is to help her immerse. But yeah, it's a fair shaila. In fact, in the tshuva, the note says, well, to watch her immerse, that's not too hard to mata, but even to help her physically, that gets harder, but he does paskin that both are permissible. I think it's kufze, tzari hei, sifkat and beis, and halachas l'chakos. Question?
What you said about the kelim, if the husband had to help her, could he wet his hands, and then as soon as he touches her, she's already...
It's the same time
yeah.
that she's getting... Tahor and
either way, it's the
same water. Then, as soon as he touches her, she's no longer nida.
Well, not until she immerses.
Is it she? He's not helping her in the bakery.
Yeah, I think it was some case where she needed help getting in.
It wasn't the hair down.
It wasn't one of our comfortable spa mikvahs. It was probably like
there's no handrail to walk down.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd see what people went through. There are many, 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 many tshuvas in Hilchos Mikvahs about how to properly make these things they would submerge in wells. It was like a barrel submerged in a well that had a... You have to know how to make the holes properly because you can't immerse in a keli. So it has to not be... everybody knows you can't use drawn water. Drawn water is darabanan. Immersing in a keli is daraisa. So how do you make that the... well water is so frigidly cold that we want to have a separate container within it that we can pour hot water into, but that's connected. That's what most of the tshuvas are about in the early days. So Baruch Hashem, we've come a long way. But anyway, just to conclude, we'll read about the makos. So the Medrash Tanchuma in this week's parasha says, Eser makos kulan mida keneged mida. The makos are mida keneged mida. Dam lama hevi alav dam. Why does Hashem bring dam on par? Lefisha lo hayamanich and benos Yisrael litvol mitumasan. Gedesh lo yiyapar and veravin. Since he did not allow the women to be mitahar themselves from their dam, so therefore the first and probably most shocking makah that came upon Mitzrayim. And kasher ya'anu oso kein yirbev kein yifrutz. Whatever affliction physically and spiritually Mitzrayim put upon us, Klai Yisrael fought back, and therefore it's a time. By the way, incidentally, there's a stira to that medrash, because there's another medrash that says, I have it here. In fact, Amar Rabbi Seina b'shah shahayu Yisrael b'Mitzrayim lo hayu ro'os anashim dam nidus. When they were in Mitzrayim, the women did not see dam nidus. They emas Mitzrayim aleim. The discussion halacha about when a person's in fear that it can suspend the cycles. V'af mi sheyotzi Yisrael b'Mitzrayim lo ro'os nidus b'midbar, also in the desert, and then they went to Har Sinai, and the Noshim were Vanoshim Kiblus Atorah Tchila. They had been so a lot of the Svarim and Agoda try to reconcile the two Midrashim, but spiritually the weeks of the Shovim are like our response to Tum in the world, and ultimately it was the strength of character of the Jewish women and the Jewish families in Mitzrayim that stood us in good stead there. And this is a time for us as well in our own time to strengthen ourselves. It happens to be at the end of this chapter in Shulchan Aruch. It talks about being tenua, that a woman should be tenua about her immersion. We live in a time where some matters of privacy and tznius are just lost because we live in a crazy world. And it's a good time for us to remind ourselves of the world that we come from and the connection we have to Kedusha and Tahara. And actually, Tahara and Mishpach is one of the main places where one can sense that. And just as the families did in Mitzrayim, we should, not under the same circumstances, but we should strengthen our own families, work on Shalom Bayis. Shalom Bayis brings out the best things, we should maintain that for ourselves, for our children, for families, and Bezos Hashem, we should be zocht to all the things that come from Kedusha V'Tahara.